I watch so many people move from being an employee to the entrepreneurial role. And for a lot of people, they enjoy the fact that they don't have to make all the decisions. And it's not on them, and the buck doesn't stop with them, and there's somebody else they can blame. But for true entrepreneurs, having somebody else to blame doesn't really do any good, because the blame is they wouldn't get out my way so I could do what I needed to do in order to get it done.
This can't be it. There has to be more. Wait, am I crazy? No. If you're yearning for more and working hard to make your dreams a reality, then you're in the right place. Welcome to Dreamcatchers. It's the only show committed to helping you self-actualize and then transcend, leaving you with the legacy you've always desired. Listen in on conversations with successful philanthropists, entrepreneurs, and founders every week as we connect with them for inspiration, education, and direction. Your host, Jerome Myers, is here to help you exit the matrix and transform into a leader of your own revolution. The question is, do you believe your dreams should be real?
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Dreamcatchers podcast. I'm your host, Jerome. And I tell you, week after week, I tell you, you're in for a treat. Without a shadow of a doubt, you're in for a treat this week. Go ahead and get your notebook out, get the pen ready. Yeah, I guess you could type it on your notes if you want on your phone, but I think handwriting is one of those becoming lost arts. And when you actually write it, for some reason, I think it sticks a little bit better. But anyway, we've got John in with us today. He is in Minnesota, and they just got hit by a snowstorm. Now, all the folks in that part of the country have been bragging about how mild the winter was and how great things have been. And today he's talking to me with that white stuff on the ground that I think so many people are trying to get rid of as spring comes on in. John, man, it's so good to be with you. Thank you to Matt Halloran for introducing us, because I know this one's going to be one for the record books.
What, I was not familiar with your podcast until Matt introduced it to me a little bit ago, and I've been hooked ever since. So it's been a lot of fun to listen to him, and I'm really excited to chat today.
I like to start these shows with the simple question. So you had an exit.
I did. Mine might be a little different than some of your other podcasts, because mine was through a private equity firm. So I worked for one of the leading wealth managers or registered investment advisors in the country, and was there for 13 years and absolutely loved it. Just had a great time. And in that time, I actually had three different private equity transactions, meaning we went from private equity A to private equity B, and then private equity B to private equity C. And when we were going to go to private equity D, I was like, I've loved my 13 years. You guys have been awesome, but I need a break. And I got to get out of being an operator for this long, switch to an advisor. It was a really hard choice. It was a little over 2 years ago, but it's one I have not regretted since.
Wow. Wow. So for the people out there, because there's some people who know what private equity is. Some of them always lump it all in as venture capital. And then some are just building their business. So were you at the private equity firm and then got dropped in to the company that got acquired? Were you at the company and got acquired by a private? Give me the rundown.
Yeah, I grew up in marketing, worked in marketing for years, ran a large agency here out of Minneapolis. And in that agency, ended up working with a lot of wealth managers and just got really skilled and experienced at that marketing. And then was recruited by a wealth manager named Wealth Enhancement Group here in Minneapolis. And they were owned at the time by a private equity firm. And so I was recruited into a firm that was already held by a private equity firm. And funny story, when I interviewed with them, I interviewed with the firm. I was like, my God, I think I can really help. I think I'm a really good fit. You guys should hire me. I interviewed with the private equity firm, and sometimes good or bad, I thought I nailed it, Jerome. I'm like, that's done. I'm hired. Got to the end of the interview and I said, I was feeling pretty good. I'm like, so are we a fit? And the guy goes, nope, you're not a fit. And I was like, oh, shoot. I was so sad. And I actually went to the whiteboard. I don't remember what I drew, but I drew something on the whiteboard that said why I was a good fit. Went home to my wife. I'm like, I thought I had it. Like, I thought it was a really good fit. It turned out he had the wrong job description. He was interviewing me for the CFO, and I'm a marketer. I was interviewing for the CMO. He called me the next day. He's like, I'm so sorry. You're totally hired. I didn't get the job. But it was a funny start to, very funny start to work in private equity.
So you're talking about all your marketing experience. Does this guy know anything about financials?
Right. Yeah, it was the wrong. It's so embarrassing. I don't know how it happened, but it really happened. I was so, I had 24 hours. I was like, oh, I thought I was the perfect fit for this firm. I totally know what they want to do. And it turned out, luckily, I was able to go there. I worked for a number, or for this firm that was held by three different private equity firms. And today I actually consult for a private equity firm because of learning so much about that experience.
Now, this part's really cool because I think so few people, once something's in private equity, get meaningful ownership. And how did you finagle from, hey, I want to be an employee to I have meaningful equity in this thing, and when we exit, I get rewarded handsomely for it?
Well, part of it's luck and good timing. When I joined, I was part of the management team of three. So there was three of us that were immediate, and they had different opportunities through those different transactions where you could write a check and buy in. So at some point you're granted options or units. And then at every transaction, many times you can then turn those into ownership rights or other areas. Over those 13 years, having those three transactions, I had different points to stay involved from an owner perspective and to grow that percentage. Over those years, I was obviously a big believer in the firm. And so that really helped me be able to ramp that up over the years and continue to be it. The other part was the firm grew like crazy. When I joined, we were $2 billion in assets. And when I left, we were $53 billion, and you know, one of the top five wealth managers. Certainly I was part of that growth, but great team, wonderful leadership. So I was, you're also at the right time at the right place, right? I was at a point, so that firm grew by 25X. And so you're able to lean into that and be on a ride. The firm has continued to grow. They're $72 billion now. To be on a ride like that is, there's a little bit of right time, right place as well. And as hard as I worked to be part of that, you can't discount all the other people that did the same and just being in the right time at the right place.
Yeah, but you're running marketing.
Yeah,
it's important for growth. So you say you went three companies. So you came in, the company owned one private equity company owned it. You got sold to another private equity company and then sold to another one and just kept growing. And where you said there were three executive leaders, I think that's the term you use. And so did the same three continue, or did you get demoted as each time that you moved to a new equity company?
Luckily, I was able to stay as part of that team. That team did grow as we changed dramatically from a $2 billion in assets under management to $53 billion. Originally, it was myself. There was a COO and a CEO. So we really had three of us. And I was a CMO, very much a marketing-led company, happened to be part of that team, right? Marketers aren't always on the management team. Super fortunate to be there. We added a very high CFO. We added a chief investment officer, a chief technology officer. So that team grew, but I was lucky to be part of that team the entire time that I was there.
So something had to be working to go from 2 to 20 or 52. All right, break this down, because you didn't just drop in into the planet as a chief marketing officer. Did you have a role in corporate at some point, or were you an entrepreneur? Like, how'd you get on this trajectory?
I'm much more entrepreneur. So if you go back to my career, I came out of college as a marketer. And on the number side of marketing, if that makes sense, ROI, customer acquisition, just always, I have an analytics side. And I worked at some medium-sized companies for about 4 years. And in that time, I saw, wow, these companies, they're nice, but it's boring. And once I applied for a promotion and they said, we can't give it to you. You're too young. We're actually give you the money, but we're not going to give you the title or the responsibility, but we want you to stay. I remember thinking, whoa, I think I'm working hard and I'm super motivated. That kind of bummed me out. So I got the entrepreneurial bug about 4 or 5 years in. And that's when I went, I referenced an agency relation or a role before working with management. And I did that for 10 years. And that was entrepreneurial. Started with 20 people, ended with 150, but similar growth where it was like a bunch of people in a room just figuring it out, and was, you know, lucky to be again in another role that grew like crazy and learned a lot. And a lot of that foundational learning is what has helped me, right? Like, I've made every mistake. Like, you're motivating people wrong. You're learning wrong. You're learning what not to do and just, you know, going through those roles. So in these roles, I've never really been in a corporate role, meaning I was at a company that grew from 20 people to 150. And then I went to Wealth Enhancement Group, the wealth manager, joined when there were a couple hundred people left when they were 1,000. So I don't know if you consider that corporate or not. I still consider that kind of mid-size entrepreneurial growth companies. One of the things I learned, Jerome, though, was they get over 1,000 people. It's not for me. Like, part of the reasons I left 2 years ago was I love the ride, tired, happy, we were winning. But I'm also like, this company is growing into something that I'm not sure I'm the right person, or it's what I wake up to do. And so a lot of the work I've done since there in advisory and on boards and working with private equity isn't companies that have taken their back at that 50 people, 100 people trying to get on that same growth trajectory. And that really was to learn. Now, it's ironic because I love to grow companies. So I almost, when I've been in the right place and been able to grow them, I almost grow them out of something I like. And then all of a sudden, when I wake up and go, wow, this is big and bureaucratic, and I'm not sure I'm good at this, it's time to jump back down the ladder.
Yeah, it's a different operator. So let's go there, because we actually haven't had that conversation on this show. What do you like about the smaller kind of bootstrapping, rocket ship type growth versus the big lugs, elephant, whales, battleships that take forever to turn around?
Two things stand out for me. The first is I feel like the opportunities to improve, change the trajectory, build is just so much greater. I remember at some of those early jobs, bring up an idea and somebody would say, we tested that 7 years ago and it was a 0.8% increase. And maybe we test again. You remember going, that's not very exciting. Like, I don't wake up to increase at 0.8, like marginally.
Not transformational by any stretch of the imagination.
And in these smaller companies, it's that kind of, you're building, there's big blocks you can go and create. You can build teams. You can find new avenues. You can fail. You can win. And that kind of, it's almost a little adrenaline-y, and I hate to say that, but there's almost like that chance that you have those big breakthroughs and you're like pumping your fist because you're so excited. There's just more of that. So that would be the first one. The second one would just be, I'm just not very good at large bureaucratic organizations, right? Like, I'm always happy to have a conversation and understand. And being a CMO, I have a boss who's the CEO and I'm very respectful of that in the chain of command. But I always wanted to have a seat at the table where I could have the conversation. Like, why are we going left? I don't understand. Why aren't we going right? We're going left for this reason. Okay. Like, you get on board, you do it, even if you're not always in. Bigger companies, my experience has been, it's just so hard. You're working in your silo, and so many things can happen outside your silo that determine your success. To me, that's really hard. And again, many people are wonderful at that and thrive on that. I just know it's not for me. It's just that entrepreneurial bug is maybe a little too strong to be in 1,000-plus person companies.
So it's your ability to influence and impact and not being beholden to other people's decisions or choices when you've got a clear goal or mark you're chasing or pursuing?
I think that's well said. I think that's really well said.
I watch so many people move from being an employee to the entrepreneurial role. And for a lot of people, they enjoy the fact that they don't have to make all the decisions. And it's not on them. And the buck doesn't stop with them. And there's somebody else they can blame. But for true entrepreneurs, having somebody else to blame doesn't really do any good, because the blame is they wouldn't get out my way so I could do what I needed to do in order to get it done.
I totally. And when I was at one of those earlier firms I referenced before, where I figured it was not entrepreneurial enough, I remember I did everything I had to do with my work. I was totally caught up. They were really happy with me. I researched everything I could on the internet. My fantasy football team was perfect. My finances were in order. Like, I was like, I was bored. I remember thinking, like, I'm going to jump out the window. Like, I need, these days are long with anything to do. Like, when I'm not challenged and there's not something going on, this is a long day. Like, it's 2:00 and you're like, okay, probably the earliest you can leave is 4:30, but I don't really have anything to do. Maybe I'll go for a walk around the office. I just remember those days. And I'm just not wired that way. It just didn't work for me.
Multiple trips to the water cooler is what came to mind for me. It's like, I remember being bored on some days and going and popping popcorn.
Right.
So that people would come talk to me, because whenever they smelled the popcorn, they wanted some. So they would come talk.
I love it, man. But you've been on the flip side as you're doing your own business now too. Then you're on the other side, you're like, boy, would that be nice. There are days, like, I have to admit, like, we're tired and we're like, I've got 97 things on my to-do list and they're all important. And having time to go pop that popcorn would be awful nice. So it's, I caution people, the grass isn't always greener. There's plenty of days where you're like, I do choose this path, but I like a breather as much as the next person, or a good vacation.
Yeah. And so one of the things that you've mentioned, and you just dropped it and kept on moving, which I think is always impressive when I have such elite guests on the podcast, is he said, I help out on a couple of boards. I was like, he said boards, and nobody talks about being on boards. We label boards, governance as X5 for founders. And we encourage founders to actually have a board so that they can become chairman of the board and kind of exit the day-to-day of the operation of the business before they make their exit. because we know that when people make their exit without having that separation, that it's like hitting a brick wall in a head-on accident. And it's because they go from going full speed to full stop, and they didn't have any way to decouple, slow down. There were no brakes. So let's talk about boards and like your interest in boards and what you see that makes companies better. And maybe because you have the PE experience, you'll just expect boards to always be there. But I see a lot of founders that don't do the board step, and I think they're missing a serious opportunity.
Boards, it's another role, right? So it's a different part of it is, and I've had to learn and make sure I'm being a great board member because I've been an operator, right? I've been the one to those stories where you're talking about roll up the sleeves and get it done. There's a problem, there's an opportunity, you make it happen. It's not your job on a board, right? Your job on a board is to be an advisor, is to give feedback, to hold accountable when needed, to help firms grow. And for me, it scratched the itch that I described, where I love these growing firms. I love the idea of we have an idea and we got to figure it out. And so I have been able to find a number of them through industry connections and through my specialty, which is financial services marketing. Luckily, there aren't a ton of financial services marketers, actually. So it is a relatively in-demand skill set. Also, working for private equity for many years, I've learned a lot about how to grow firms, how to structure firms, not just the marketing side, but how to operate a good firm, how to act like the firm you're going to become. And so a lot of that has transitioned as well, where it's not just about growing, it's about structuring and building and hiring teams. And for me, I also do some invest in both direct investments and through venture capital firms. And so between all of those, I feel like I get to see a lot of interesting businesses, right? Some that I look at myself, some through venture capital, some through my relationships in the industry. And I've been fortunate to find companies where there was a fit and a need where I thought I could support and really believed in the mission of the company. And I am capped out, meaning I set a limit of 5 and I'm at 5. So I'm like, okay, that's where I need to be for these days to make sure I can give them attention and be available and do that. One's on the nonprofit side and 4 on the for-profit side. But that's been a good number for me in addition to some of the other consulting I do to keep me plugged in. The other thing I would say, Jerome, is when I exited, I didn't want to retire. This wasn't, and I'm not a lot of energy. I just turned 50. I got a lot of gas in the tank. So I wasn't anywhere near retiring. It was, hey, I wonder if I can do this differently. I wonder if I can do this on my own. I wonder if I can do this as an advisor versus an operator. And it's been a great 2 years and 3 months in, I can tell you it's been just the best. And I have no plans to change that path and to jump back into the operating role.
So let's talk about the board. What do you see is the biggest difference between a CEO that's running their company boardless versus some of the folks that you've been able to see as a board member? And I guess really what I'm interested in or curious about is how maybe the day-to-day interactions goes for that CEO.
There's many different kinds of boards, but there's two specifically that I work in. One is where the board, or call it the representing party, owns the majority of the firm. And in other words, they're the boss. The CEO reports to the board. That's a different, right? That's a structure where there are different conversations where occasionally the board will say, you know, obviously you don't want to fight with your CEO all the day, or that's not a good relationship, but like you might have to say, we need to do these things. And there's a little bit more directive input. And again, a board job is not to operate, but at the same time, certain times a board will say, I think we really need to go left, or I think we really need to get to profitability, or I think we really need to focus on this area. And that's always a conversation. Other boards where you're asked to be on the board or given some compensation on the board, you're not their boss. You're not part of a structure where you're the boss. You are there to provide valuable input. And certainly that can at times mean disagreeing with the CEO, but it's a little bit more like, where do you need me to help and how can I do it? And so that conversation with the CEO is a little bit more collaborative, where it's, hey, what do you need? Hey, it's always should be that way, right? They're both consultative roles, but a little bit more, where can I be of help? And I will say board, when I think of a board, I don't think just showing up to board meetings. If that's your role as a board, number one, I don't think the board is being leveraged as it should. Number two, probably pretty cool if you're a board member, because you don't really have to do anything. But to me, it's the board, it's all of the strategic work and working on that strategic plan and being on call for that.
So which one do you think works better for somebody who wants to exit?
Boy, I hate to give you an answer, but I'm going to say it depends. I am honestly going to say it depends, because what I will say is, as someone who came out of my wealth management experience being with the three different private equity firms, we had great relationships with all three. And I know sometimes people think private equity and they think gross, and sometimes other people think private equity and they think cool or just a bank, or you know what I mean? And so I was very fortunate to be in three different relationships. Those private equity firms helped us grow, helped us keep our culture, helped us become a better firm, helped us run more professionally. And so the growth that I was a part of was a lot driven by those private equity firms. Let me give you an example. I'm going to go on the way back machine a little bit. 2009, it's the middle of the recession. Okay. It's bad. And I'm working at a wealth management firm. I'm like, what did I do coming here? This is maybe the worst career choice of all time, right? Are we even going to have an industry tomorrow? The Great Recession. It's bad. Through work with a private equity firm, they came to us and said, all right, yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. But we're going to solidify you guys. No layoffs for the next 2 years. No one's getting fired. Because what really matters right now are two things. One is taking care of clients. Like, if you're freaked out every day, all of the advisors that worked on the firm, how are you going to go do great things for your client? So they came in and they culturally understood. And they actually said, we're not going to cut the marketing budget. We're going to grow. Because everyone's pulling back. This thing's going to end. We're going to go. What was that worth? Like, we didn't know what to do when we were a good firm. That private equity firm created a scenario we like doubled in the next 2 years. And it was because of that, right? It was because of that great input, leadership, support. Like, you guys are safe. We believe in you. We're going to ride it out. You know, at least 2 years. Let's go. Like, what is that word? Like, that changed the whole trajectory of a firm. So those are things, those stories that you don't always hear about private equity are like, oh, okay, that's awesome. Like, firms who didn't have that love hearing the story because they're like, yeah, we didn't do that. And we're like, yeah, we did it.
We did. And we took your market share because you pulled back.
Mm-hmm. So back to your question, though, that's where it can depend. Private equity, like any, sometimes I think of a boss or a funding, or it comes, there's good ones, there's bad ones. But I would say being with a good one is a game changer, right? Someone that is a growth equity that's all about helping you grow. I know sometimes, again, private equity doesn't always get the love because not all are good actors. But if you get with the right one or the right group of them, it's phenomenal.
A lot of people want to unlock their ultimate potential, but lack the strategy, support, and stamina necessary to achieve their major goals. They often try to overcome these challenges by trying to do it on their own, causing frustration, fatigue, and eventually failure. We have developed a model for a center life, aka the red pill, to help them bolster their beliefs, gain clarity on their path to success, and provide accountability as they take action on their goals. When they take the red pill, they rapidly accelerate attainment of their goals and begin to experience a life of significance and impact. Want to find out more? Hop over to JeromeMyers.co. Now, let's get back to the episode.
Wow. Wow. It's funny. I don't know if it's funny, but they do have a reputation more often than not. It's always interesting to hear the guys, oh man, they ruined my company and maybe I should just buy it back and bring it back to its former glory. Like, very rarely do I hear people be extremely complimentary in the way that you are about the companies that you work with. What, outside of maybe the foresight to grow in a recession and making everybody feel safe instead of freaked out about the recession, was there anything that really just set them apart? Because guys trade war stories all the time. My experience is this. And was there anything where you're like, oh man, these guys are, or gals or whoever, are so much different because of?
I do. One is private equity as a hold period. And that hold period is, it can be 2 to 12 years, depending on the structure and how it goes, right? But there is some time limit, right? They're investing out of a fund. That fund will run so long, that fund will eventually close. They need to exit the investment. To me, the ones that separated have a track record of building firms, not just for that period, but for the long haul. And you can do it by talking to other firms that have had investments with them. You can ask them, give me your best in giving an investment that didn't work. Like, you really need to understand those private equity firms to see what kind of operators there are. The second thing I'll add, and remember, I'm a marketing growth person, so it's like in my DNA. PE firms that have to use a lot of leverage or a lot of debt to oversee a company, obviously, it can often take a lot of the money out of the company. And sometimes a firm needs to be in that, and that can work. I'm a fan of private equity firms that put money into the company. Like, let's grow this thing. What do you need? How are we going to figure this out together? Let's agree on a strategy. And then here's some tools to help you go execute it. So I think that's where it's really pricky. And one other great story is the firm I was working with was for sale, was in a process. And one firm was being very aggressive. And the CEO came to us and said, hey, you guys, I don't think we want to work for that firm. Based on their track record, based on what they've done, I don't think and how we want to grow and what our vision is for the company. And it's aligned to that firm. Not that's a bad firm, just not aligned. And so in the process, we politely said, if that firm ends up buying our firm, we will all like to transition out over time. And in effect said, they're not going to buy us because we had a unified management team. They said, you guys operate like this. We operate like this. It's not going to work. Now, could we have still been sold to them? In theory, but are they really going to buy us if we're all going to leave, like the whole team? So it didn't happen. It was great. And that was the good leadership to say, it's just not a fit. That's not the kind of firm. And again, the other thing I will say is private equity firms generally are not operators. They are not there to run the business. And if they are, something's real wrong, right? That's where you get the bad story, right? That's not good. They're there to provide guidance, capital, strategic input, resources, all those things, not operate.
And so you basically had a good example for your transition. So let's get micro. So the why, did you get a wire or a check on the exit? Wire. The wire hits. Yeah. I suspect that it's more money in your account than you ever had at one time.
It was a good thing. I'd been through actually three of them. So don't forget, yeah, there was three different. But yes, when you have an exit, it's, yeah, that's a day where, whoa, like that's a nice, my net worth was X and now it's X plus two. And that's, it's hard not to be pretty giddy about that.
And so how long did that part last, the giddy part?
Not as long as I would think, meaning it was bittersweet because I knew I was leaving on the last one. So there was this kind of this transition and it came through, but at the same time, I was walking away. I was choosing to get off the bus and the bus is doing great, but still going. And it's like, I'm getting off. And there's something really hard about that. I'd actually journaled a lot the year before because that's a big decision. You're like, you're walking away. You're like, yeah, I'm walking away. It's time. And that journal really helped me. I would go back and look at it. I would go, there's those days where I've had very minimal regret. So I've been lucky that in that decision, I'm 2 years and 3 months later, still very confident in it. But at the same time, yeah, you go back, there's days you're like, oh, why did I leave? That was dumb. I should have stayed one more round or one more turn or one more. And I go back and I read that journal and that really helps. That really helps. And that kind of gets back to the bittersweet of, yes, wonderful outcome to have a transaction like that. And then at the same time, it was my time. It was my time to do other work and to do it different ways.
I think some people romanticize it and make it better than it was. I think the work and the grind and the hustle and the bustle and the struggle and the frustrations and arguments and the negotiating and some of the things that a lot of people don't like. And you're like, oh man, I miss it. And then because you time capsuled it, right? You caught that stuff in real time. You can see how you actually felt and you can actually go back to that day. It's almost like having pictures of what's going on to remind you of those days. And it's not every day. And most days were probably better than the days that weren't so great. But there are those days where you're like, man, I wouldn't trade what I got now for those days because they're a part of the mix. Go ahead. Yeah, I know you want to say something.
No, it's just, yeah, there's a sense of relief. You're building this thing, you're part of it, it's your baby, all those bad analogies. And you're like, there's some validation in that like we built something meaningful and we built it to a scale that other people valued it. And yeah, there's pride in that, right? And when you're selling your business, you're talking to a lot of people and they're giving you validation, like you've built a great business. And hopefully they're not just saying that to trick you. But so there is that thing. And then it's like you break it up and it's gone. So there's a relief component. There's a celebratory component. And for me, I'm always going to remember this day, but this day is over.
So at any point, did you feel lost? Did you feel sad? Did you wonder what was next? Or did you figure that out before you walked out the door?
I was really lucky with this. And I won't say that those things never crossed. I was able to consult back to the company for a number of years. So after I left, I was still had some involvement. So it wasn't like it's everything's gone and it's dead. I was still able to talk to the team and have some awareness. So there was, it was more of a slow ending than you're gone, you'll never see it again and how it goes. So I was very lucky with that. I am somebody who likes to have a home, if that makes sense. And that's one thing I thought a lot about. I'm going to leave and I have these different areas I'm working on. between boards and consulting and investing, but I like having a home. Somebody, it's lonely out there. It's a big world. And I like working with people. I'm a people person. So I've been lucky to have a couple really good relationships through all of that time where I still feel like I have a home, even if it's not where I used to work. Through these other relationships and these other things, I have that stability of relationship. And as much as I do split my time, I'm not really a lone wolf, if that makes sense. Or you come in and you get the work done and then you're just gone. I don't know. It's just, I'm not wired that way. I really appreciate those long-term relationships that are built.
Yeah, I think that was one of the biggest struggles when I left and started doing the real estate stuff full time. And it was like, man, I'm a lone wolf out here. Nobody wants to talk to me unless we're talking about a deal that they're a part of. And if they're not a part of a deal, they could care less how the deal is going. So these struggles are mine and mine alone. But what I realized in hindsight was being willing to be lone wolf allows you to go climb mountains that you, other people might not want to climb. And so there's some freedom with that, but I agree with you 1,000%. It can get super lonely. One of the things that we've noticed when we talk to groups of founders who have exited is that like 60% of their relationships go away when they walk away from their business. And so when we talk about the five people they spend the most time with, usually three of them are wrapped up in their business in some way, shape, or form. And so what's cool about what you described is, hey, I walked away, but I was still tied in some way, shape, or form. It wasn't like sell it. And then some people call it employee or entrepreneur purgatory, where it's like, hey, I sold the thing. Now I don't have any control. I don't really have any influence or say, but I'm stuck doing the things. And basically I'm a button pusher versus a decision maker. It sounds like you were like in a consultant role and they were had you on targeted things that needed to move. And based on your track record, that probably kept that door open because they trusted you more than other folks. Is that fair?
It's fair. It's the benefit of been very lucky to work with some great people who had great trust and established that over years and years. And a lot of times leaving isn't always pretty, right? Like it's, hey, I'm leaving. What, you're leaving? I thought we were in this forever. And I had some, I worked with leadership that was, I had developed a lot of trust with, and thus they gave me an exit ramp. That was one that allowed me to gracefully leave, but still be helpful on my way out. And I'll always appreciate that. Like that I was being treated very well, even though you've decided to step off the merry-go-round is, I don't know if it's, it happens every time, but I know many times it doesn't. And so I was very fortunate with that.
No, a lot of people cut off your access and until you're being escorted by security out of this place because they don't want you to do damage because you're leaving, or you might take something with you that they don't want to lose.
And it was nice. You know, I didn't leave to go to another firm. I left because it was time to leave. There's a difference there. And I think understanding that emotionally allowed me to communicate in a way which, you know, here's why. And I actually gave notice 9 months before I left. It was like, hey, I always told you I'm not going to like just walk out, but I think the time's coming. And the businesses in this place, these transactions are happening. I think it's going to be my time. And so it was great because able to develop a plan and talk about it, recruit a successor, be able to do a really functional handoff. Because again, I didn't leave because I was mad. I didn't leave because somebody did anything wrong to me or I didn't like the strategy or whatever. I just left because this company's getting big and I'm tired and I've been doing this for 13 years and I think it's time to hand this off. I'd rather do it now. So it was, again, it takes two to have a good relationship and I was very fortunate to have those people with me.
Now, were you already investing? Because oftentimes after the exit seven is the post-exit portfolio. And yep. So people get a chunk of money and then they're trying to figure out how to be a resource allocator, even though they've been an operator for however long. And now it's, ooh, which company do I pick? And let me go invest in something that I don't know anything about, but it sounds really cool. And like they end up losing their money. So were you, since you were working with PE companies, were you already exposed to investing on your own? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, it was to a modest amount, but to be honest, I didn't have time. It was the time effort to like, whether it's to be on a board or to fully evaluate investment or to find investment or to work with different players. So part of it was through that 9 months, it was great because I had a long runway to figure that out. So I was able to hit the ground running the day I was no longer at the firm. I already had two or three lines. I was able to communicate to people, hey, here's what I'm planning on doing. You know, do you know anyone I should talk to or how I could be helpful? And so I was very fortunate to have that kind of rolling start. And that said, it ramped up significantly once I was gone and had you know, many more hours a week to be focused on finding investments, finding the right boards, finding the people to network with and to learn those things. So it was a rolling start, but it still ramped up once I was gone.
Yeah, man. I think this is probably the epitome of an ideal or a dream exit, because I watch so many people jump out the plane and then try to build a parachute while they're falling, and that doesn't work. And they're burning through capital because they don't know what they haven't figured it out. And then even the emotional stuff, the six centers of doubt that we talk about all the time. So self-image, like for you, I'm a marketer. I grow companies and all I can do is grow the companies that I work for. Maybe I could take those skills to a bunch of other places and maybe I can make a direct capital investment here and help you scale, because I've done it for companies of your size before, and get rewarded in a different way than I have. And oh, by the way, give back and help younger folks who are, they might not be younger, but maybe younger in experience, get the same results that I've got over the past decade. The work piece, I think you figured that out. You're still doing a lot of similar tasks. You're not the operator, but it's an advisory role, and you're seeing, and because you actually operate it, being an advisor is, I will say, easier. You know what the outcome is and you know what the situation is, what questions to ask, but the actual button pushing, that part is very time consuming and it can be very stressful, but you can stay out of the stress and still live the guide, give the guidance. Now, I'm looking at you, John. You said you just turned 50. You look like you're in great shape, man. Did you not give up your health to grow the companies and grow the wealth? Like, how did you figure that part out? Because that's one of the other things that people struggle with.
I must have a lot of filters on, or maybe our daughter was using it and turned some filter on. It's awfully easy to say. No, it was. That's always a struggle when you're in that role. And also, you have this dream life. Okay, I'm going to leave the 70, 80 hour and lots of travel. And that was the role. And it was great. And I loved it. But I'm going to leave it. And I'm going to have all this time to work out. And I'm going to have all this time. That's not quite that easy. And I am able to still go to the gym more and do those things. But it's like, the same time, there are days where it's, wow, I got a little bit more free time and I'm on my phone too much. Or I'm just being honest. I wish I could tell you every day was a model of efficiency and I do pretty well to keep a very tight schedule. But there's days you're like, probably wasn't my best day. That probably wasn't the most effective day. I have been able to maintain more balance. One of the reasons I just left was personally with some self-help with my parents and kids in high school. It was like, I just had a couple of years. It was like, I'd like to be really flexible with my time. I'd really like to be able to set my own schedule. And that's just not as possible in a fast growing, thriving, when you need to be in Boston, you need to be in Boston. And you can't really say, I'm not going to Boston tomorrow. Obviously, if it's an emergency, don't have to go. But in this role, I'm able to much more set my own schedule. And whether that means taking the dog for a walk or attending our kids' sporting events or more time with family, that's where I will say I feel incredibly lucky that I can set those times and figure that out.
Is it luck? This is by design, man. You picked, you decided, and you executed a plan. Is it really luck that you...
Well, definitely planful. But that said, if the firm I was with didn't grow 25X because of me. Now, was I part of a cog in that wheel of many people that did? Absolutely, right? I'm very proud of the part I drove in that. But it was a small part, let's be honest. And I think I had a lot of influence on that business. And we were driven by organic growth. And I was supported in that, but great CEO, great private equity partners, great. The market for wealth managers has exploded the last 15 years where I was in the space. A lot of things did go right. Now, again, I'm not discounting how hard I busted my, you know what, to get there, but come on, I could have done that in a lot of firms and been at square one. So I do think luck is a big part of it. Now, I've been planful on top of that, but it's a mix, right? It's a mix. And the plan, I'll also say just draw. The plan sounds clear now. It wasn't always clear. There were many days where I'm I remember saying, I either have the smartest or the dumbest plan of all time, what I'm doing now, consulting for these different boards and doing these things. I'm like, is this smarter? Do I have 9 jobs? And it would have been way easier just to have one that I did. There's plenty of days where it's like that strategy, it sounds refined looking back, but it was a progression to get there for sure.
Now, you told me that you listened to Rick's episode and I'm not sure how deep you got into it, but he talked about going into a pure void. He talked about his succession planning and how he ramped it down and how when they walked out, there was still this emptiness. There was still this loss. Now, he was in his business for longer than you were in your business. But on the backside of this thing, and we see it for anybody who's been in it for over 10 years, there's this, we call it the founder's exit paradox. And most people don't think they're ever going to experience it because they got more money than they ever had in their bank account. And they can figure out what trip to go on or what car to buy or what watch or whatever, right? The hedonistic stuff fades pretty quick. And so you said there were some days and then you moved on. But if you would, because I don't want listeners to think it's all rainbow and unicorns, right? Like on the backside of the exit, there's some tough stuff. And so can we talk about that for just a couple of minutes? I don't want to put you in a dark space, but we got to let the listeners know that this thing is real.
Happy to talk about it. And one of the difference to Rick Ellowin's credit, you know, I was not the founder of the firm. I was a early member who helped grow it significantly. Rick founded that thing, right? That there's a difference. And when I imagine how involved I felt, like I felt like I was an owner, a founder, a driver, X to Y, and proud of what we accomplished and built. I joined a marketing staff of 5 and it was 50 when I left and did all these cool things and grew from X to Y. And there's, yeah, you're proud of that. Like you're proud of that. When you think about Rick and the compliments to Rick Ellowin, who built that firm and got called on the radio and that great story you guys tell on the podcast. And when he goes back and I forgot some of that, I was grateful to do it again. That was, his name was on the door. Let's not forget. Even in the merger later, Ellowin Financial Engines, right? Even when they merged with one of the biggest RIAs in the world, his name was on the door. So I probably a little bit easier than Rick, meaning I was an important executive team member. It wasn't Werns Financial. John was, my last name is Werns, John Werns. So it wasn't John. Thankfully, that'd be a terrible name. Ellowin is a much better name. But yeah, again, I would go back to those days. I've been very fortunate to have, you gave that example of what you teach and having 3 or 4 key relationships professionally that have transcended that time. And there are people I still work with today, years later. And some of those, you know, I've had a few other people move on from the firm I was with. We work together again now. It was like, I know what that person can do, and I have this opportunity over here. And so I've been able to play Matt a time or two. But yeah, there's those 3 or 4 people where they're friends. I hate to call them colleagues. You don't want to, but they've become so much more than that. And I'm just happy to have that. I'll say also, there was a couple of people I was dying to work with that I was then able to work with. You always say, if we ever get the chance, we should work together. I had the chance. And thankfully, some of those relationships became some of my closest work relationships. So you're not just talking about the P&L and the runway and all the good things. You're talking about the dog or the kids or the fun stuff. That has helped me on some of those days where you look back and you feel a little alone. I also left. This is an interesting story, Jerome. The firm I left, I actually left twice. So I left once. So sorry for the balloons, my daughter. I think my daughter turns that on sometime. That was fun. And we had recruited a new CMO. And unfortunately, the new CMO wasn't the right fit. And I ended up going back. Now, I was consulting, as we talked about that time. But then there was a seat and I didn't necessarily want to go back. That was not, but it was, hey, can you help us? I felt like I let him down a little. The transition plan didn't work. I was still consulting. I went back. Also, the day I left was the day COVID started. So I went from never home, it was March 1st of 21, to never not home, right? Like in the craziest way. Now, luckily we had a couple of crazy kids and a fun household. So I was able to keep my wits about me. But yeah, I went from running around the country doing cool things to in my basement, in my office basement that I'm in here now, not leaving it for months at a time. So it was a shock.
It's funny because succession planning for some people is a curse word, like exiting or retiring is a curse word. And then you go through and you do the thing and you find out how important it is and how it's vital for the continuance of business and the success of the business and the future growth of the business. But people put it off. It's, hey, I don't want to do a will or I don't want to make a trust. It's like,
exactly.
Your relationship with your business is going to end. And when your relationship with your business ends, you better have some plan in place so people know what to do.
And I found one of my questions was, I have a flexible schedule, meaning I choose how many boards I'm on. I choose if I'm consulting or working for a private equity firm. Those are choices I get to make. And I was trying to figure out, okay, so 60, 70, 80 hours. Okay, that's a lot. I would like something less. Is it 30? Is it? I will say when I was doing 20 hours a week, I wasn't particularly happy. Like it was like, okay, I got to find another board. I got to find another firm to work with. I got to find 20 hours. And it was all of a sudden I'm playing solitaire on my phone. And I've worked out. I'm working from home. I got done with the day. It's 4 o'clock. My kids are teenagers now and they might not. They're not. I can't bribe them to hang out with me every day. I need That's not enough for me. So finding the balance of loading up the opportunities, the boards, the investments with that fixed stuff has been there's tweaking. You're like, okay. And there's been times where that might be too much. There's like my wife will say, I thought we were going to stay flexible, or I thought we were going to, our daughter is in California playing softball and you have to come home for a meeting. I thought we were doing this. So it's been, you're still pulling the levers, trying to get that balance.
Yeah. And they'll always keep you honest, man.
She's awesome. Yep.
They will always keep you honest. So let's talk about your direct investments. Have any of your companies that you invested in sold? Have you exited any of your investments?
We've had one exit that's been good. And then we have another one. There's a few more that are getting close. So yeah, it has been good timing for those. Many of them transact. And then there's a period where as an advisor, maybe they don't need you anymore. Or maybe there's actually a chance to say, do I really want to re-up again? This was great. Thank you for this multi-year period. But do we want to do it again? So it's an interesting, when you hit those times, it's the portfolio might turn over. We might say, that was awesome. Thank you, John. Here's your, you know, your funds that have, you know, you've made on this transaction. Good luck. And so there's still goodbyes out there, even when you're doing the private investing and board work. And then there's other ones where I'm going to be honest, where it's like, I actually joined a board of one and I resigned 3 months later. And it wasn't, there was no fight. There was no awful scandalous. I didn't steal toilet paper from the bathroom. It wasn't anything crazy. I just got in there 3 months. And I went, I'm culturally not the right person. And how I think I can help and how they see me helping are two different things. And that firm's doing well. But I remember I just went to the CEO and I said, time's valuable. And I don't think I'm the best fit. And I'm still friends with that company. And I talk to them quarterly and try and support them. I was like, I shouldn't be on this board. Like, It's not. I get to choose how I use my time. And this isn't the right. It's just a fit thing. And this is not the right fit. So I walked 3 months. I was like, I'm back off.
I don't want to specifically talk about that company, but how did that change your evaluation of boards going forward and or companies going forward as far as you lending your talents to the board? Because I think this is something that'll help a lot of people out who want to get into that space.
I think it's relationship with the CEO. Back to your earlier things that we talked about in terms of how you can work with the different people. And some CEOs, as we all know, are still in the cowboy or the cowgirl phase of their leadership, right? They're still in the, they don't have an operating model. It's, you know, the Wild West. They're making things up as they go. And for me, I want to work with someone who is building towards structure. That doesn't mean it's perfect, right? Because to the point of, I don't like huge firms. I don't like bureaucracy. But sometimes when you're with these firms and then every time you meet with them, they're going a completely different direction. You're like, okay, I can't track. I can't be effective as a board member. I don't think you really want a board that's going to help you choose a direction and then stick to it. You're like a board that just says, hey, I got a question. Can you help me with this? Yeah, I can help you with that. To me, that's not a fit for me. So it really is about relationship to CEO or founder of the firm and having one that you get to know them before jumping on the board. And in that way, you're like, okay, do we work the same way? And do we have the same vision of just how things are run? Not do you pick A or B? That's not, it's like, how do you get to the selection of picking A or B? And there's some ways to do that. I don't know, have you ever heard of the entrepreneurial operating system or traction as a method? So I think it's phenomenal. I've actually never used it myself. I've been around its usage. But to me, it's just like when I see a company implementing that, it's meant like you can have it off the shelf. You could use that. You could just, you have a structure you would learn from General Mills, whatever. But is there a structure? Is there something, some guiding foundation? To me, that's the firms that I really like. Lucky a number of the firms we work with happen to work with Traction. Actually, I think the book is it's one of these or it's there. Or it's, I can't remember which one it is, but it's great. Okay. And so for me, I have found that's how I can then be helpful because I don't want to just be on call. I want to work on what is the 3-year strategy and how are you get there?
When a company gets to a certain size, you have to. Mm-hmm. There's too many people for you to change and twist and turn every other week or every quarter, let alone. And then the initiatives get so big that it takes more time than a couple of weeks to get through them. And that CEO probably at some point ends up limiting the company. Now, if you do it too early, you can choke it out because there's right. not enough flexibility. But there gets a point where you've got to retool, restructure, and then really put a plan in place and be able to communicate that plan across different levels of leadership, as well as being able to think out into the future. So that's really interesting. And I think it's interesting because you said, look, man, I don't like 1,000+ employee companies, but you probably don't like 10 employee companies either, because it's just not substantial enough. But there's that sweet spot for you where you're like, man, I can really do work here.
I'm okay with the smaller ones if there's a structure, or if it's a structural thinker, meaning there's a planful approach. And that doesn't mean that early, for those early days, you don't plan on changes. That's not what that means. One of the boards I'm on is the company is under 5 people.
No way.
Yeah, but the founder's just, it's amazing. The firm's name is Testimonial IQ. Andrew Johnson is the founder. He was actually a founder at a previous firm that I was on the board of. And we just click, like how he thinks and how he builds and what we do. And yeah, they're growing quickly, but it's startup. Like it's they built a great product. They're rolling it out. They're still figuring out what the world even looks like some days. I love that one. It's just one I'm really happy to be a part of. So I think it's more the mindset than it is even the size. And just do they have an operational mindset, which is funny because I would say in my career, I usually am not the most operational thinker, but you have to have a structure to then have innovative thinking. And to your point, not to stifle it, but you've got to have some kind of planful approach, even to then throw, okay, we're going to try 3 crazy things on top of it.
I love it, man. John, I could talk to you all day. The energy is so great. And just a vast experience. And so you've been able to do here, there, weave through. I usually wrap up these interviews with 2 questions. The first one, when you think about your network, because you've been able to actually pull people through the portal of exit, who else should be a guest on the show?
I don't know. I was going to throw a good friend out there. Actually, it's the person who introduced me to you. So Susan Thader, who is the chief marketing officer at a firm named FMG, is one of the best connectors I've ever seen in financial services and is an award-winning, just super impressive person, and has switched from big company to entrepreneurial technology startup to all of those things. So has had a number of exits and moves similar to myself along the way to get to where she's at today. And she's just the best. Susan is just one of those people you meet or talk to and you're just like, she leaves a mark.
All right, Susan, we're going to get you on. We're going to send this one to you so you know that you've been called by John. All right, and then the final question, because we've covered so much ground. I love that we got to sit in between governance, exit 5, and play around in your post-exit portfolio. So we got through 5, 6, and 7 today, which is pretty rare. A lot of people are still trying to figure it out post-exit. So they stop at 6, and that's a big hurrah. But you've been able to get on board. You've been making direct investments. You've been spending more time with the family. You check all the boxes on what when people are trying to figure out what next looks like. And you say it openly. Like, I have my days where I think about going back, but I don't regret the decision that I made. And then even like bringing the plane down and having a gradual descent instead of just jumping out and saying, it's over, I'm out of here. So the question I would like to ask you to wrap it up is, what's the one thing you want the listeners to take away from the episode?
I think it's really finding your sweet spot. For me, it's taken a lot of time, meaning early in my career, I was with the wrong size firms. I was with these bigger firms. I was a small firm person. So that took me a while. Then I became into these. I was like, oh, I love growth firms. And that's been a huge part of my trajectory, even when I've at times been a part of growing myself out of the roles I like. And so it's been changing and being open to change to get into the right seat in the right kind of firm. I think a lot of people work in the wrong kind of firm for big parts of their career, whether it's what we talked about in the large company, they don't ever feel like they really were a part of something, or if they're in the small one where they're like, this stresses me out, I don't like it. Like, you know, finding that right size firm and finding the right, you know, those people to me was key. And, you know, I've been fortunate to be in a couple of them. And I look back and how much fun that was, right? Man, those days were so fun. And, you know, waking up and being like, this is where I was supposed to be. This is the right firm. These are my people. And being there for sometimes 10 years at a time, but then pulling the plug and trying to start it over again to recreate it.
Wow. That's so good. So it's like right fit is the difference between massive success. And I mean, as a marketer, I guess that would make sense, right? You got to find product market fit before you can go to sale.
Totally product market fit. And I would say success, but I'd say happiness. I'd say happiness leads to success. If I'm happy, I'm working hard, I'm driving, it's like good things are happening. Those are my most fun days. And then realizing like this firm turned into something. The firm did nothing wrong. The firm is as good as ever. It just grew into something where it's like, great firm, just not my firm anymore. Time for somebody else to take that and run it forward. And God, that was hard. And people think you're nuts. Like, you're leaving. What's wrong? What's wrong with the firm? Nothing. What's wrong with you? I don't think anything's wrong with me. I'm as screwed up as the next person, but what are you doing? It's time.
I got different priorities.
And that's where the journal came in. That's where you're like, you go back to the journal because there's people who are hitting you over the head. What are you doing? I thought you guys are doing well. Yep. And I'm out. And I'm happier because of it. And so appreciative of having the opportunity to do that and make it work. But yeah, it's made me a more effective person in my career.
Wow. John, you're the epitome of a dream catcher, man. Thank you so much for joining us on the episode. This is a game changer for anybody who listens because they get to see the backside, right? There's all the doom and gloom that a lot of people say, don't ever exit, don't ever retire. But there's so much more on the other side of it. And you're living proof that you can do it early, right? You did it in your 40s. You can do it early and enjoy life and then do things more on your terms, more and with the financial security that you get from a liquidity event. And I just watch so many people struggle with it. And they're like, I don't know what to do, or I don't know what I would do. If you got transferable skills and transferable relationships, your exit can be extremely pleasant. And that's what you taught us today.
It's been more good days than bad. And I'm very, again, I keep saying I'm appreciative or lucky or fortunate, but man, it's what a great time. And a lot of what I do now is let's be really supportive of the people who have been so supportive of me. And let's make sure that we're part of that team.
All right, y'all. So that's the episode. To the listeners, your dreams should be real. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thank you for joining the tribe today. We would love to hear from you. Please don't forget to rate, like, and share. Perhaps someone you know could benefit from what we've discussed. Until the next time, remember that your dreams should be real.